curtain call for the next episode of the Perspectives on Performance podcast with Dr. Louise Marler. Louise interviews a cavalcade of fellow performers from all walks in this must-listen series for anyone wanting to enhance their presence or profile. Here's Louise.
So, good morning from this beautiful morning, Andrew. Now, I'm here in Melbourne and you are in New South Wales, which I believe is pouring with rain at the moment. Is that right?
Yes, and I'm in the Blue Mountains, so we are not flooded.
Well, the day you're flooded in the Blue Mountains, you know, we can all go home. And Andrew, we have met speaking together at various events, and you help people transform in a special way. And I'd love you to tell people about what you do.
Whoa, a couple levels here. The level you recall is I'm a Feldenkrais practitioner, and yep. My teacher, Moshe Feldenkrais, had a theory about how to improve brain functioning. We demonstrate that the theory is useful by helping kids with cerebral palsy move better, or people recovering from stroke, or people with ordinary back problems. It's all about how the brain coordinates body movement. But the theory can be generalized to any skilled behavior. Mm-hmm. So I've taken it into the realm of creativity training. I wrote a book called Creativity Games.
Yay.
A lot of it is improvisational acting games, but these games that I chose were not just for fun, though they do that. They were chose to, each game has one or more thinking skills embedded in it.
Brilliant.
So by playing the games, you develop the skills.
Yeah.
So that's cool. I'm a psychotherapist, Louise. So I've taken this idea of improving functioning into psychotherapy and developed some physical techniques, among other things, to do that. And now my big thing, which I've been passionate about for years, is how do we catalyze a healthy society, one that'll be ecologically sustainable and fulfilling for people, and that translates into how do we help people think better and improve their emotional functioning.
Okay, well, our podcast is Perspectives on Performance, and it's about thinking about performance, and this is highly relevant. In fact, Andrew, you and I have a connection there on the Feldenkrais front, because my teacher, Professor Miller Price in Vienna, who I worked with for 12 years as her assistant, she actually worked with Feldenkrais himself, and I've seen many.
Who was this, please?
Professor Miller Price, Ellen Miller Price. Ellen was a gold medalist fencer in four Olympics, actually. She won medals in four Olympics, and she worked with Moshe Price. And I've seen videos and heard a lot of his work firsthand, and her work was based on his work. And I guess one of the major phrases that I take from that work is let the body breathe. And the choices that we make about body movement and to get the most effective one. And, you know, I think about it all the time. You know, as I look over here, I can, you know, turn my head like that. I can turn my whole body. I can turn just my eyes. What's effective? And this is very much what people don't understand. You tell me, I mean, you're the one who's talking, but with habitual patterns that we have, a set of habitual patterns that we have, and we think that that's natural. It's no longer natural. It's habitual, and they feel natural because they're comfortable, but we need to rethink those skills and say, are they the best ones that I could have for performance?
The two elements there, Louise. The first one is there's this quality of the psyche that we could call the witness or the observer self.
Okay.
That's the part of our psyche that can observe exactly what we do, without judgment.
Well, judgment's a huge thing because people bring judgment into it all the time. And I'm saying it's not personal. You know, it's not wrong. Yeah. It's not right. They're just options. Let's think about it.
So the witness is right next door to the critic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, next door.
Everybody knows about the critic, that inner voice.
Oh, here he is.
By the way. So Moshe's way of saying that was, if you know what you're doing, you can do what you want.
Oh, I love that phrase. Can I write that down? If you know what you're doing, you can do what you want. I love that.
But if you don't know what you're doing, then you're stuck with habitual patterns. Now, let's take a moment to celebrate habitual patterns.
Oh, wow. Celebrate habitual patterns. Okay.
Yeah.
Me, I want to beat them up.
We can't reinvent the wheel every day of our life, every moment. A well-established pattern is a skill that we can use without much thinking, and it does the job for us.
Yes, has a purpose.
However, it becomes problematical when there are problems. So how do you know when there are problems? Well, at the physical level, if you have a pain, there's something obviously not working in your way of coordinating your body. If you have an emotional upset, same thing. There's an occasion of upset that you can bring the witness to and then inquire, what's the dynamic of this? What's my part in the upset?
Yeah. Okay, great. So this is the right way of thinking, which is to go, I have a problem, something's not working. And sometimes that can be inspired by pain, but often in a performance sense, that's inspired by, I feel dreadful and I get terrible feedback. What happens then is you have to go, well, what am I doing? Now, what else could I be doing? However, that pattern gets blocked by people presenting because they go, nobody likes me at all. And that's because I'm useless and there's nothing I can do about it. And that's where people get blocked.
Another aspect, I think, Louise, is it sounds like you're describing emotional triggers that people have to whatever, to audience feedback, to critique from you, the coach, whatever. So do you know about EFT? I imagine you do. The tapping technique?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So this comes into the conversation. If people learn how to do EFT, and you can learn it from stuff on the web,
right?
Then you have a tool to resolve your own emotional triggers.
Well, it's deeper than that. It's like a core belief that people have that they can't change their patterns.
Yes, but we don't have to challenge that core belief. We just ask them to do EFT. Do you feel a shift? Yes, okay. Or
power of EFT.
Look, again, let's acknowledge the reality of that core belief. The belief I can't change my patterns makes sense if you don't actually have a technology for doing that. So if somebody goes to a Feldenkrais practitioner, then they get coached through group movements or through individual session, and they make the discoveries that lead to the change.
I've got a funny Feldenkrais story, because he used to do exercises where he'd get people to lie on the floor and then maybe roll over, and just to explore ways of how to roll over. Do you roll over with the lower body going first, or the upper body first, or the arm leading, you know, whatever it is. And people had to lie there and experiment with how you roll over and what would be the most efficient. And he was being interviewed at the time. People are on the floor doing these things. And he's saying, I let the body make choices. I let the body breathe. I let the body have its options. And then he looked down and he turned to someone and said, I've told you not to do that. Now, I get the... That's a true story. That's a true story.
Well, that was not his normal.
It was
Moshe. I trained with him, as you know. And
very Viennese.
Mm-hmm. Part of his psyche was very dominant.
Yeah.
He's not a perfect being. None of us, as far as I know, are, but he wasn't. Mm-hmm. In a moment, I'll tell you a joke about it, but let's stay with this for. But when he actually was doing our training, coaching awareness through movement, he did it in a Feldenkrais way. Be slow, sense, find your own way. Follow the pattern, because if you're just wandering off on your own experiments, you won't get the coherent learning that this is designed for. So he was insistent about following his instructions. But within that, to find your own way, how does your shoulder move? What do you notice? Where is the resistance? Stop short of it. Be gentle with yourself. All of that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in contrast, you did a number of workshops in Washington, D.C., so a yoga teacher.
It must have been old then, because my teacher, Professor Miller Price, would be 120 now. You know, she was elderly when I knew her. And I thought Feldenkrais was older than she was.
Oh, no, he got started in the 1940s. He died, late 70s, make a guess.
Okay, right. Mm-hmm.
Yep, so, he was...
Very few people know about Feldenkrais in Australia, I find. People are more familiar with Alexander and different techniques, you know, Pilates and things, but Feldenkrais, yep. Magnificent work, magnificent.
Yep. So I'll tell you a Feldenkrais joke.
Okay, what's a Feldenkrais joke?
And this joke was told at the end of our training. There was a, we gave ourselves a big party down at Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco. So one of Feldenkrais's senior students, Ruthie Alon, got up and here's the joke. A prominent New York psychiatrist dies and goes to heaven. And St. Peter says, oh, Finkelstein, the Dr. Finkelstein. Oh, well, I'm known. That's nice. St. Peter says, well, would you like perhaps to do a little bit of work here? Well, great. Maybe I'll get a practice going. Who do you have in mind? Well, we have somebody very important. So, things, oh, great. I'll get an upper class practice. Who is it? And St. Peter leans in and says quietly, it's God. He thinks he's Feldenkrais. And Moshe cracked up.
Oh, that's gorgeous. Oh, wow. So who can I, I've interrupted you on your train of thought, but who are you working with and how are you helping them?
So I'm catalyzing a global movement. Watch this, it's big, to shift mainstream consciousness. So that as a society, we become committed to doing everything required to pull out of our ecological nosedive and develop a society that operates within planetary boundaries. That means we don't destroy the environment. And if you connect the dots, it has to be a caring society because competition will continue to destroy ourselves. So the platform is called Inspiring Transition, but it's just a platform.
Inspiring Transition.
Yeah. So inspiringtransition.net is the URL.
.net, okay.
But we don't talk about that so much. We talk about the goal. And the goal is to transition to a life-affirming culture. And from that goal, all sorts of practical things follow. For example, if people train in Feldenkrais, then you learn how to gently tune in with people rather than dominating them. So that's part of what's called partnership respect, a term from Rayan Eisler. And we're at an evolutionary point where either we evolve an Australian culture, an American culture, a global culture that operates on partnership, respect, goodwill for the common well-being, or we already said it, we will destroy ourselves. The American president, John Kennedy, said, either mankind will end war or war will end mankind. And it's that, where we have to evolve beyond competition or consequences. So we have a small global network. Our most prominent colleague is climate scientist Michael Mann. I met him in Sydney. We have others, and the platform is robust, so we're prepared to grow. So anybody who cares about the future can look up the website, make a connection, and we can do something together.
The philosophy of your approach would very much help people in their performance approach, because so often when we are in performance, we think it's like a competition. We feel judgment. We feel a wall come down between us and between you. And we don't get that whole concept of it's the model of subvention. I use that term. It's customer service term about when I enter into and engagement. There is no listener, speaker, and listener, and medium. No, we all become one. We are now one. There is one energy. So when you get up on stage, it's not you versus them. We are all here. We are all on stage. We are all breathing together. We are all, and it takes away from a lot of the stress. And very early on, to actually interact with that audience in some way. And I go from the perspective of hearing or feeling their breath. I need to feel breath going out of my body, into their body, out of their body, into me. I need to have that movement in the, in the air. And that's, I don't know, calling it factor Z. You know, I don't know what else to call it, but it's what's missing in our virtual environment.
Well, that expands, Louise. One of my great teachers, Jean Houston, knew Teilhard de Chardin, the great Jesuit paleontologist.
Right.
She was a teenage kid. She knew him as an old man. And one day he said to her, "Jean, Jean, breathe the air. Who else has breathed it? Jesus Christ, Genghis Khan. Some of the molecules are in every all of us." So we're all connected with all of the life, the bees and the trees, the animals.
Someone once said to me that every time you breathe in, you are breathing in, well, a tiny fraction of that breath will be a breath that, say, Jesus breathed. It's gone. Yeah. It hasn't disappeared. His breath has not disappeared. It's intermingled, and we are breathing it in as well and breathing it out. And, of course, the word, I often say this, but the word inspire is not, it comes from the verb spirare, to breathe, and you inspire others. You breathe air into their body. It's mouth-to-mouth resuscitation and getting that flow going.
Sometimes when people hear an exciting idea, they go, wow.
Yeah.
And even though that's an exhale, wow, it's a really an energy lift.
And it's interesting that when you say that wow, that you use a hand gesture to go with it, because I believe arms guide airflow. So we need the arms to be moving to allow the airflow to move. You know, so often we're made static in our presentations, no move. And it's killing people. It's killing people. It's killing them physically and psychologically. You know, I was talking to a woman the other day, and she's on the screen, and she's saying, "I am having quite a bit of problem with my presentations." And I said, "Do you know your jaw's rock solid? Rock solid, like your teeth don't separate." And she said, "I'm having injections into the muscle to Botox injections into the muscle to release it. I'm having I have plates in my mouth to hold it to protect." You know, like real problems. And here's an idea. Here's an idea. Open your mouth. Open it. There's a surprise. You know, like it's not that hard. Just open. And now, you know, practice that, because the body will say, "Oh, thank you, thank you. Oh, gosh, I haven't done that in a while. Thank you very much. It actually feels good." You know, the body's not going to go, "No, show it again, show it again." Well, it might for a bit, but, you know, it was also good. Thank you, thank you.
I gave a teenage girl a Feldenkrais lesson in a neurologist's office one time in Washington, D.C.
Right.
I was called in because the wife of the neurologist had had some good results. So imagine the scene. We have a very stuffy neurologist, three-piece suit, very formal, a middle-class mother, and a girl with a collar around her neck, not to support it, she had cerebral palsy, but just to give her feedback if she got too tilted.
Right.
And they wanted me to work with her speech. Well, Feldenkrais never taught us how to work with speech.
But of course, totally related. Mm.
But he taught us how to think.
Right.
So the first question, and they said, "We would like you to," she's working on a sonnet. So I said, "Okay, would you please give me the first line of the sonnet?" So she goes, "When you disgrace with fortune," and I'm thinking, "Oh, that's far too old for a girl this age," but I put that aside. what's he actually doing? Because that's the first Feldenkrais question, right? The witness, what are you doing? How do you make the difficulty? She's taking her jaw off to the side.
Yeah, very common.
That's part of it. The other part is, when in disgrace, she's constricting her throat. So one of the Feldenkrais techniques is to have the person, quote, do the thought on purpose. Because if you do it on purpose, you get some voluntary control and you may get some awareness.
Right.
So I said, please, would you say the same line again, but do it as if somebody's choking you. So she goes, when in disgrace, no difference. Well, I did improvisational acting and I'm a bit of a ham. So look, let me help you. Say it again. And I reached out and I pretended to choke her.
Yeah.
And she goes, when in disgrace, and really hands it up.
Yeah.
Good. Now we've got some voluntary control in the habitual way. Then I think, okay, so that's constricting. What's the opposite of constricting? Well, I think it's a sigh. So I said, can you go, almost nothing, right? Just, she does that, no problem. Can you add a little something to it? Can you go, ha? Good. Can you go, have? So I'm building up the first word, which is when.
Yeah.
And then I say, can you go, when? And she goes, when?
That's
go
true.
Off to the side again. Okay. What do I do? Ah, I remembered a game from improvisational acting. Please, I want you to blow at me. And when you blow at me, just blow at me. So she starts to blow, and by accident, occasionally she would organize her jaw so she blows directly at me. And whenever she did, I'd go, whoa, whoa. So pretty soon she's going, and she's organized her jaw completely and perfectly. Well, I never touched her.
Ah, gorgeous.
So then I said, yes, so can you say the first word of the sonnet? She goes, when, with the jaw well organized, but still a bit weak. I said, okay, well, there's a way to activate the head resonators. So would you go, give you a choice. You can go, mm-hmm, or mm-mm. Well, she was quite a controlled kid, so she wants to go, mm-mm, mm-mm. So our time was up, and I said, okay, can you say the first word of the sonnet? She says, when, and it rings through the room. So that's called improving function.
That's a beautiful moment, isn't it, when you do that? Beautiful. Gorgeous. Often people will say, do you find that people will say to you, I feel released? Do they ever say that?
No, I've never had people say that.
No, all right. What do they say to you?
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll tell you one lovely story, though. I gave somebody a fairly standard Feldenkrais lesson. She could move better. It was pretty good, one-to-one. And she gets up and says, would it be okay if I danced?
Ah, right.
It was lovely, truly lovely. Yeah. It's really valuable to talk about Feldenkrais because the image that people have of working with other people is to tell them what to do. And telling is very inefficient. If people know how to do it, they could do it. But to coach them to make a discovery is a totally different approach. Yep.
Huh? And what people don't realize is you can't do it on your own. You know, if you could make the discovery on your own, you could do it. You need people to guide you to do it. And, you know, Feldenkrais's book, if anyone's looking for Feldenkrais's book, the book is called The Elusive Obvious. And there's someone who stole that title, actually, and used it for another book, which I was quite offended about, but because it's Feldenkrais, The Elusive Obvious. Is that correct? I'm drawing that out.
The book I would recommend would be Awareness and Movement.
Okay, right.
Because it's a book of exercises taken from transcripts. But it would be easier for people to go online and look at some of the awareness through movement, that's what it's called, awareness through movement, ATM videos.
Okay.
Or
right.
Better yet, the ideal thing post-COVID would be to actually take a class. because if I'm leading a class, for example, my job is to not just give the instructions, but to watch how people are carrying them out.
Yeah.
And occasionally I will see that somebody misinterprets. That's no blame. But then I have to coach to help them discover.
Mm-hmm.
Or I will see that most of the group gets a certain movement, but there's something one person doesn't. So then add a special extra little bit to help them discover, oh, this is how the shoulder moves, and then they can do the reaching better or whatever. So ideally, either individual lessons or also do a group lesson and get the personal attention.
Wow. I'm realizing talking to you that more work than I had thought has come from my training in that area. You know, I just totally did.
More work than you thought? What are some examples, Louise?
Oh, just the way of thinking. Like, you know, I don't believe in continual webinars. That I actually have to, in my program, I will always have a masterclass, because I say to people, you know, your group, they can't just hear it. You know, they've heard it before. They're not making the changes, and they need that extra set of eyes on to give them that guidance and to recognize. And we don't do that a lot. We listen, say, to podcasts. We listen to webinars. We listen to, when it comes to habitual change, you need a catalyst in there to say, come on, did you recognize this? And even sometimes if you don't say, did you recognize this, but come at it from a different angle like yourself, where you trick them into doing it a different way.
That's it. Trick them.
Mm.
Or just cap it laterally and have, yeah.
Often people have a voice problem, and I will find it is solved by something completely, you would think unrelated, but is totally unrelated. I find that with eye movement, when people actually get their eye movement back under control, often their voice changes and they'll stop doing upwards inflection. They'll stop going high. They'll stop doing all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to vocal fry, if you actually get people to use their hands, they'll get more air out of their body and the vocal fry will stop. So they say, well, what do I do about the vocal fry? I don't do anything about the vocal fry. Use your hands. You know, don't do anything.
So my take on that, Louise, is you're dealing with the whole system, not just with a symptom.
Yeah, well, do you know, I often feel that I'm not talking to the person to whom I'm working. I'm talking to the unconscious mind, which I have sitting, you know, back here. So I'm looking past you to this. It's this I'm talking to, not this. You know,
yes.
This would be better if it knew. This needs some, you know, interaction. and that's what I'm talking to.
So my experience, sometimes I give a Feldenkrais lesson that seems to me, yeah, it was a good lesson. The person made some changes, made the discoveries, but then I'm in awe because sometimes the person takes the little bit that I gave, the little bit that I gave, and makes something magnificent of it for themselves.
Right. You're giving everyone the benefit of the doubt and capability of great things and future and thinking habits. And I just love all of those thoughts, Andrew. You've got a beautiful way of thinking, really beautiful. I would recommend anybody to do work with you around these issues. In fact, you know, let's get you in with some of the people I work with. Honestly, I just admire your work tremendously, and the experience that you've had, the education you've had, and the thinking that it's brought about. Andrew, how do people get in contact with you if they'd like to come to you directly?
You can't do it anymore.
You can't do it anymore!
I'll explain why.
Okay.
So you and I have a conversation in the context of your work as a performance coach. But the context I bring to it, which is our common context, is we live in a world that's literally ecologically self-destructing.
Right.
You recall the incredible fires we had last year.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's floods right in New South Wales, but then it was the map of Australia. You see the smoke plumes from Perth to Melbourne. It was everywhere here in the Blue Mountains, fires on both valleys and both sides.
And that was terrifying for you.
And that's just the warm-up for what's coming in terms of global warming, to make a bad pun. So I take that reel, just as the school strikers do, just as Greta Thunberg does. And I say, okay, if this is real, then we should all take adult responsibility to turning things around. Now, people don't know how to do that. No blame. It's not easy to think about that at first. I've developed a way. So the reason I'm not doing private practice is because I'm devoting full time to catalyze the movement to actually shift the thinking of the culture. And of course, my background as Feldenkrais helps me have an idea about how to shift thinking.
Great, Andrew. And you're doing great things. So if people want to become involved in your movement, how do they contact you?
My email is andrewgaines@andrewgaines.net.
Right.
Just my name twice over, .net.
Mm-hmm. G-A-I-N-E-S.
Yeah, that's good. And they can go to inspiringtransition.net, check out the approach we're doing. There's a lot on the web because there's a lot to it, but it's pretty clear, I think. And love to have anybody say, hey, I want to be part of this. When they come, though, and ask, what can I do or what should I do? I probably won't answer that. I'll ask them to think it through, and then they'll see what to do. But I would have some ideas, so they're not left on their own.
Andrew, that's beautiful. It's gorgeous to talk to you.
A pleasure with you, Louise. A pleasure.
It's a great honor. And I hope that your movement takes over the world, because it would be magnificent.
Well, to be frank, I would love it if you would check out as well, and if we could become colleagues downstream at that level, that'd be fantastic.
Great.
Okay. Bye, Louise. Okay.
Thank you very much, Andrew. Thank you. Thank you for your time to talk. Very much appreciated.
Hmm.
Bye.
There's Louise. Thanks for listening. Never miss an episode by subscribing to the Pop Podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Are you a keynote speaker? Need executive coaching or voice training? Contact Louise at louisemahler.com.au.